Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hi, this is Trish. I'm reading the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Tuesday, March 24th, 2020. From the front page, energy. Local oilman highlights Saudi presence in Texas. U.S. refineries need to be able to process the Permian Basin's light sweet crude, Kirk Edwards says. By Mella McEwen, MMCEWEN at MRT.com. Amid the oil price war between Saudi Arabia and Russia that has helped the coronavirus pandemic send prices crashing to the $20 level, Odessan Kirk Edwards wants to point out just how linked the Saudis are to Texas. He has penned an opinion column noting that the nation is importing 1 million barrels a day of crude from Saudi Arabia, and that Texas's largest refinery at Port Arthur is owned by the Saudi kingdom. What I'm trying to do is educate Texas consumers, especially our energy friends on the Gulf Coast, that the largest supply of gasoline is from Saudi Arabia, the same people who are trying to put us out of business. Edwards, president of Latigo Petroleum, told the Midland Reporter-Telegram in a phone interview. As consumers, why do we do that? He said. From the front page, coronavirus, CEO, MMH is not being overwhelmed, by Stuart Doreen, sdoreen at hearstnp.com. Midland Health's president and chief executive officer, Russell Myers, said Monday morning that MMH is nowhere near overwhelmed. Russell Myers said 14 persons are in isolated areas of the hospital on two floors for respiratory issues, but he doesn't believe all would be labeled as persons under investigations for coronavirus. Myers said that only one patient has tested positive, the man in his 60s who was disclosed last week. Much of Myers' press conference Monday morning provided an update about the hospital and its capabilities. He said the hospital was at 41% occupancy, which is low for this time of year. He also said 100 people were seen over the weekend in the ER, which he said is about half of what is normally seen this time of year. He said the hospital has kept those persons under investigation or those with certain respiratory issues inside smaller areas on two floors, including the critical care. He also said there are contingency plans for opening up more of the hospital if needed and using larger spaces, even outside the Central Midland Hospital complex. As far as the isolation of the patients, that is taking place on the critical care floor and space for medically sick patients, Dr. Larry Wilson, chief medical officer for Midland Memorial, said later in the day. We have done a lot of work in the hospital to be prepared for managing this disease as it presents itself. We are doing a good job isolating patients that we believe potentially could have the covert infection. Myers said the hospital has lots of ventilators, addressing a concern seen on social media. He said there are 44 in the hospital and another 37 single-use ventilators that could be used if needed. He said the hospital is soliciting donations for protective equipment, such as masks, at its Legends Park complex at 5615 Deauville Boulevard. Later in the day, Wilson said the hospital received PPE, personal protection equipment, masks, and the N95 ventilator-type mask. We are giving out a breath of reprieve that we got a little bit more opportunity to protect our health care providers in the midst of taking care of patients. As far as testing goes, Myers said 110 tests have taken place and 7 have come back. He expects results to come back quicker this week. Testing results currently are sent to commercial labs that are coming online. Wilson said later in the day he has been promised by pathology department officers that within a short period of time, there will be tests available that can be done and processed in Midland. Coronavirus. Peyton, community has to take this seriously. Leaders prepare for realization that more cases are expected. By Stuart Doreen, sdoreen at hearstnp.com. Midland Mayor Patrick Peyton had a serious tone during a Monday afternoon press conference. And it wasn't because there were 15 persons under investigation for coronavirus in COVID-19 wards set up at Midland Memorial Hospital. It seemed to come from the realization of what could be. Rather than waiting to be told to take shelter in place, we as a community have to take this seriously. Our hospital chief of staff just told you there's a danger of our hospital being overrun if we don't take care of ourselves and take care of what's going on. That means you don't congregate at Dennis the Menace Park because it's an open-air park. You still don't congregate in these places. The reality is we're the kind of people who take these challenges seriously. We're the kind of people who do not need to be told what to do, but who do the right thing. And now you've seen us turn the page this week. And it is imperative that each and every one of us do absolutely the right thing that we know to do, so we don't have to be told anymore what to do. So we can protect our own, protect ourselves, and get to the other side of this. Monday's press conference with Midland's Unified Command was a reminder of best practices, from common sense stuff like thoroughly washing one's hands to taking seriously the recommendations of social distancing and other once-in-this-lifetime restrictions. Officials also put notice out there that cities in Texas are either thinking about or already have started shelter-in-place measures that are more restrictive than Governor Greg Abbott's current declaration for residents in Texas. Dr. Larry Miller, chief medical officer for Midland Memorial Hospital, said Monday that while there were still just one confirmed case, that there were 15 people at MMH under investigation for coronavirus, an increase of 3 to 4 on Friday, and about 10 at MMH who are high risk. A proportion of those will be positive. He said a majority of the persons under investigation are older than 50, and there are 4 on ventilators. Wilson said there likely are people in the community who have the infection, and by avoiding calls to stay at home, they are increasing the odds of spreading it to others. He said when vulnerable people, 15% of the population, get the virus, they end up in the hospital. It's a simple thing, and we can stop this disease in its tracks. If we stay separated from one another and we keep spread out, if I cough right now, none of you are going to get a virus load from me if I were infected. But by and large, it's a safe thing if we're separated from one another. But if we're going to ignore this, we go to the grocery store and one person is coming down the aisle this way and I'm walking down the opposite direction and we pass right beside one another, we're ignoring the realities of this thing. It's going to continue to spread. It's something we're not used to, and we have to be thinking differently than we're used to thinking, because this really does impact us. And if you don't want to end up like New York in Midland, Texas, with the level of disease and the doctors in the hospital getting sick and being ventilated themselves, we've got to avoid that. And the only way we're going to be able to do that successfully is to be the citizens I know that West Texas folks are and listen to what's being told to us by our leaders and follow through on this. Because if we don't do it for ourselves, somebody's going to do it for us at some point.
Education.
Board to decide on in-district charter partnership. By Stuart Doreen, sdoreen@hearstnp.com. After a pair of community meetings to help educate Midlanders on the Sam Houston Collegiate Prep transformation into an in-district charter, the Midland ISD Board will vote today to partner with an out-of-state operator. During the virtual meeting, scheduled to begin at 5:30, the Board will vote on 3 items related to the transformation: the authorization of the Colorado-based Third Future Schools to operate and manage Sam Houston, the performance contract for Third Future Schools to operate and manage Sam Houston, and the approval of the Midland ISD Texas Partnership Benefits Application to receive Senate Bill 1882 benefits beginning in the 2020-21 school year. The transformation into an in-district charter will be the third for the district. The others are the Young Women's Leadership Academy and Idea Travis. Third Future Executive Mike Miles said in February that schools connected with SB 1882 benefit because an outside operator receives $1,000 extra for each student. Both Idea Travis and the in-district version of Sam Houston are to begin operating after the summer break. Midland ISD leaders have stated there is urgency to finish off the transformation because, as with Travis, Sam Houston Collegiate Prep has one of the longest failing streaks in the state, 4 straight years, according to the TEA. Midland ISD Superintendent Orlando Riddick said previously that the transformation to an in-district charter is required because the district either would have to close the campus, as was done with the former Crockett Elementary campus, or it would face TEA take over. The Texas Education Agency has written Midland ISD on at least two occasions about its problems with campuses and their lengthy stint on the agency's consecutive failing list. Governor Greg Abbott announced last week he was waiving State of Texas assessments of academic readiness STAR testing requirements for the 2019-2020 school year. Texas assessment system provides educators and parents with reliable information on whether or not their students have mastered grade level content, according to the Republican governor. If there isn't testing this spring, there won't be any grades next fall, thus giving Sam Houston a reprieve from takeover. Still, MISD staff has stated the need for the district to move forward immediately, rather than providing current campus leadership the opportunity to turn around the school on their own. The lack of a STAR test does not give Sam Houston or any other campus a free year from the penalties associated with not meeting state accountability standards. Sam Houston will enter the 2020-21 school year with four consecutive failures, putting it in danger of state intervention if it fails next year. The TEA's pending actions concerning SB 1882 partnerships for next school year makes intervention for Sam Houston necessary now. MISD officials explain the TEA plans to move up its SB 1882 turnaround proposal deadline for the 2020-21 school year to December 2020 or January 2021. The deadline for the 2019-20 school year is still March 31st. Recommendations would need to be submitted for board approval in either November or December instead of February or March. This means the district would have to use performance data from October, not even 3 months into the school year, to form its recommendation. A recommendation based on performance data from so early in the school year is not appropriate and would be incomplete in evaluating whether a partnership should be pursued, because performance in the beginning of a school year is often quite lower than the end. Having more months of learning creates a far clearer picture of a campus academic position. The district also used the current coronavirus pandemic as a result to move now with the third future partnership. It is possible that students could be out of school between 2 and 6 months. Thus, they could potentially enter the 2020-21 school year with an extended summer slide, putting them behind where they should be academically and making October performance data skewed lower as compared to performance data taken later when more learnings have happened, the district stated in the email. Diamondback cuts budget again as oil prices continue to sink. By Sergio Chapa from the Houston Chronicle. Midland Exploration and Production Company Diamondback Energy is cutting its 2020 drilling budget for a second time this month as crude oil continues to fall to nearly 20-year lows. In a statement issued late last week, Diamondback has cut $1.2 billion from its capital budget, meaning that the company now plans to spend between $1.5 billion and $1.9 billion on drilling and completing new wells, and plans to cut more if oil prices continue to fall. Diamondback made the announcement at a time when many exploration and production companies are cutting their drilling budgets in response to rapidly falling oil prices. A showdown between Russia and Saudi Arabia has exacerbated a global supply glut, while the coronavirus outbreak has lowered global demand. West Texas Intermediate crude oil closed trading at $22.43 per barrel on Friday afternoon, a price not seen since March 2002. Ranked as the fourth most active driller in Texas based on drilling permits, Diamondback Energy announced budget cuts when oil prices fell down to the $30 a barrel range earlier this month. However, oil prices kept falling, prompting the company to cut even more cost. Since those original budget cuts, Diamondback ordered all of its hydraulic fracturing crews to take a one-month break. After that break, the company expects to judiciously reactivate crews and run between 3 and 5 of them, depending on oil prices, down from 9 crews for the rest of the year. Founded in 2007, Diamondback Energy focuses exclusively in the Permian Basin of West Texas. The company reported a $240 million profit on nearly $4 billion of revenue in 2019. Commissioners appoint Kreiner sheriff effective April 1st. By Caitlin Randall. See Randall at MRT.com. Midland County Commissioners on Monday unanimously voted to appoint David Kreiner sheriff effective April 1st, 9 months before he was set to be sworn in after winning the Republican primary. Kreiner will complete the remainder of the late Sheriff Gary Painter's term. Because there is no Democratic challenger, he will run unopposed in November and begin his own term in January. Kreiner also resigned as constable for Precinct 1. During Monday's commissioners' court meeting, the commissioners tabled appointing a new constable, saying the person chosen as Kreiner's replacement has not yet met the educational requirements. As God closes one door, he opens another, Kreiner said during the meeting. I'm looking forward to the excitement I'll have at the sheriff's office. Sheriff Richard Gillette, who has been appointed by commissioners following Painter's death, is retiring effective March 31st. He previously told the Reporter-Telegram he agreed to serve as sheriff only until a new sheriff was elected and decided to retire after Kreiner won the Republican primary. I just want to thank the court for giving me the opportunity, the privilege, and the honor of serving as sheriff for the last 10 months, Gillette said during the meeting. It's been great. He also thanked the sheriff's office for welcoming him back. Gillette worked at the sheriff's office for 22 years before joining the Midland County District Attorney's Office as an investigator in 2006. I wouldn't trade my career with anyone. I've got to work with some legendary lawmen and lawwomen. It's been quite a party, and I've enjoyed all of it. Kreiner previously said he will be sworn in as sheriff at 10 a.m. April 1st at the Midland County Courthouse. Additionally, on Monday, commissioners approved using $45,000 from contingency funds for drugs and medical services for county jail inmates. Gillette said more inmates have required medical treatment than the previous year, and the sheriff's office had $300 left for those services. $10,000 for the purchase of an additional canine for the sheriff's office, and extending the county's disaster declaration until April 3rd. County Judge Terry Johnson issued an emergency declaration on March 18th for a duration of 7 days. An extension required approval by the commissioner's court. Johnson said the declaration will allow the county to receive state and federal assistance related to the coronavirus pandemic. Anonymous Midlander will match all donations to Helping Hands by Caitlin Randall. See Randall at MRT.com. An anonymous Midlander is offered to match all donations to Helping Hands of Midland up to $100,000 to assist the agency in serving those affected by the coronavirus pandemic. Mary Harden, executive director of the nonprofit, said they had virtually no money coming in after they were forced to temporarily close their thrift store because of the pandemic. She said the store supplied most of the funds for operating expenses, financial assistance for those they serve, and their food pantry. The nonprofit also receives donations from local churches, but most have moved services online and aren't doing collections. It was looking extremely bleak, and we were thinking we'd reach a point where we'd run out of money. Harden received a phone call Sunday night from a longtime supporter of the charity who is offering to match donations dollar for dollar. She said the donor, who wants to remain anonymous, offered to match up to $100,000. Harden said any donations they receive will go toward helping those affected in any way by the coronavirus, with a focus on the unemployed, the sick, and elderly. She said the funds could be used to help those in the restaurant and oil industries with rent and utilities, or those who become ill and have medical expenses. Midland is expected to be the hardest hit city nationwide by a coronavirus recession, according to a report from the Brookings Institution. The report attributes this to Midland's oil and gas economy, with 42% of its workforce in high-risk industries. Helping Hands is a faith-based, all-volunteer organization whose mission statement is to serve the poor and underprivileged of Midland County through financial, spiritual, and emotional support, according to their website. Harden said they've received about $30,000 in donations so far, and $20,000 has come in from Excellence in Giving and $10,000 from individual donors. Donations can be mailed to Helping Hands of Midland at 1301 Brinson Lane, Brinson, Midland, Texas, 79703. Harden said donations cannot be made online at this time. For more information on Helping Hands and volunteering, you can find that information at helpinghandsmidland.com. Oil companies cut Permian Basin presence amid virus. Associated Press, Carlsbad, New Mexico. Oil and gas companies have begun reducing their operations in the Permian Basin as the spread of the new coronavirus slows global energy and adds to the drop in the price of oil. The Houston-based Apache Corporation recently announced it would pull all of its oil and gas rigs out of the Permian to save on short-term spending. The company planned to reduce its 2020 capital investment by almost $1 billion. In the coming weeks, the company plans to reduce its Permian rig count to zero. Read a March 14th news release to limit its exposure to short-cycle oil projects. Chief Executive Officer John Christman said that the reductions were needed during the market struggles. Apache must remain ready to address further volatility in the coming months. We are significantly reducing our planned rig count and well completions for the remainder of the year. Meanwhile, Pioneer Natural Resources, which operates mostly in the Delaware Basin on the western side of the Permian and is one of the largest acreage holders in the region, also announced a significant cut in operations. The company's rig count will be cut from 22 to 11, while completion crews will be reduced from 6 to 2 to 3. Overall, Pioneer's capital budget was cut by 45%. Robert McIntyre, a spokesperson for the New Mexico Oil and Gas Association, said the state's industry was well-positioned to emerge from the financial crisis a leader in energy production. He pointed to New Mexico's overall rig counts reaching 116, a record, and growing to 117 in March, an increase over March's 2019's average of 105 rigs. But until the virus is contained and the price war between Saudi Arabia and Russia is resolved, McIntyre said the industry faced uncertainty. Our companies are making choices to modify their short-term business plans and make sure they can survive this business environment. There's no question the ripple effect is impacting our industry and others. Because of the uncertainty, the short-term is challenging. Budget could take massive hit as coronavirus crisis continues unfolding, lawmakers learn, by Cassandra Pollack at the Texas Tribune. Comptroller Glenn Hager briefed Texas House members on the state's economy and budget Sunday night, saying while it was too soon for specific forecast, both are expected to take potentially massive hits in the wake of the new coronavirus pandemic, according to multiple people who were on the conference call. The members-only call, led by House Speaker Dennis Bonin, Republican from Angleton, was one of the state lawmakers' first glimpses of the impact the virus is expected to have on multiple industries, state finances, and Texas. Texas's largely oil-fed savings account, known as the Economic Stabilization Fund or the Rainy Day Fund. Hager, who referred to the state of the economy as the current recession, according to multiple people, predicted both the general revenue for the state budget and the savings account balance will be drastically lower, possibly by billions of dollars, when he makes a revised fiscal forecast. He said that update could happen in July. Later Sunday, the comptroller's office said that unless the legislature spent money out of the savings account before July, the balance for the fund would be revised down, but not by more than $1 billion. In October, Hager estimated the state budget would have a nearly $3 billion balance for the fiscal 2020-21 biennium. The balance of the Economic Stabilization Fund, Hager announced at the time, would be around $9.3 billion by the end of the 2021 fiscal year in August. The virus has already shocked economies around the country, though it's unclear how extensive the economic downturn will be. As the new coronavirus grew into a pandemic earlier this month and Saudi Arabia declared a price war on Russia, oil prices plummeted to their lowest point in decades. Since Texas is the nation's top oil-producing state, its economy and budget are particularly sensitive to oil prices. Then, as the virus started spreading within state borders, officials shuttered or restricted industries' operations to limit public interactions and stem growth of new infections. These two situations created a double whammy by slowing two key revenues that fuel the state's budget and the economy. sales taxes, and oil and gas production. Experts have said the economic damage will largely depend on how long the public health crisis lasts. Last week, Governor Greg Abbott issued an executive order directing bars, dine-in restaurants, and schools to close, as he estimated tens of thousands of Texans could test positive for the virus in coming weeks. On Sunday, Hager told lawmakers he plans to keep all parties updated as the picture for the next several months continues to crystallize. He also pointed to the post-9/11 economy as a good perspective on what the near future could look like, and mentioned multiple times that the amount of federal funding that Texas receives could also have a major impact. According to members on the call, Hager fielded a number of questions ranging from whether the governor has the jurisdiction to push back sales tax collections for specific industries. No, the comptroller said, to whether state dollars can be shifted around within the state budget during a crisis. Abbott, for his part, noted last week that he and the legislature can tap into the state's disaster relief fund immediately to help respond. He also said the Economic Stabilization Fund could be used at the appropriate time, which he said would happen when state leaders know the full extent of the challenge we are dealing with. Before the stabilization fund could be used, Abbott would need to summon state lawmakers back to Austin for a special session before the legislature reconvenes in January 2021. When asked at a town hall about the possibility for calling such a session, Abbott said that every option remains on the table, while noting that there would not be any need for such an action if every Texan followed guidance to help curb the virus. On Sunday night's call, after a member mentioned a special session, Bonin said Abbott had not yet said there was a need for one, though the speaker added that it could, of course, change in the future. This is from the opinion page on March 24th, Our View, which is an opinion from the Beaumont Enterprise. Governments must be transparent during crisis. Governor Greg Abbott has approved some temporary changes to open meetings laws because of the coronavirus crisis. Clearly, no segment of our society should be immune to these kinds of adjustments, but Abbott's changes do not undermine the mandate of transparency and access, and no public official should think otherwise. Abbott's order states that if a city council, school board, or other governmental body is going to hold a telephone or video conference meeting, it must still post a written notice that gives the public a way to participate remotely, such as by a toll-free dial-in number. It should also include an electronic copy of any agenda packet that officials will consider at the meeting. Taxpayers will still be entitled to participate and address the governmental body during any such meeting. The governmental body must also provide the public with access to a recording of any telephonic or video conference meeting. These kinds of changes have a clear goal, allowing governmental bodies to continue to function, but in a way that guarantees as much access to taxpayers as possible. It should go without saying that this should be the goal of every city council member, county commissioner, school board trustee, or other elected or appointed official: maintaining trust and openness. Rumors and misinformation will flow in a crisis, and one important way to counteract that is with transparent government. Local officials will have to issue some unpopular orders, such as closing a particular facility or type of business. Any suspicions of secrecy about those directives will just cause more problems. As always, public officials should err on the side of openness. If they're not sure that a particular discussion should be held in open or closed session, talk about it before the people who will be most affected. Many of the discussions that occur behind closed doors could legally be held out in the open anyway. This is a good time to break any bad habits in that regard. Public officials who have questions about open meeting requirements during this crisis can email the Texas Attorney General, email at to-ma@oag.texas.gov, or call 888-672-6787. They should not hesitate to reach out and welcome in their constituents. From the MRT Education section, Tuesday, March 24th, community members pitch in during pandemic. Pandemic is defined by the Centers for Disease Control as an epidemic that has spread over several countries or continents. usually affecting a large number of people. Social distancing is referenced by the CDC as it applies to COVID-19 means remaining out of congregate settings, avoiding mass gatherings, and maintaining distance, 6 feet or 2 meters from others when possible. I'd given these two terms very little thought 2 weeks ago. Now they consume most of my thoughts at home and at work. While at home, I am practicing social distancing with a high school senior. While the situation is, in itself, scary and unique, scenario that none of us have faced before, for the class of 2020 has brought a sudden halt to a time that should be filled with joy and anticipation. These last months of the school year should be busy with prom, college visits, spring sporting events, and ultimately a crowd-filled graduation ceremony. Instead, seniors are communicating via social media and technology and are rarely seeing each other face-to-face. Prom has been postponed. Spring sporting events have been canceled because college campuses are closed. While the excitement should be growing, senioritis should be setting in, and each last should be embraced as they experience the end of the year with their classmates. They are instead just waiting. Many of their last having been canceled, they're waiting to see if graduation ceremonies will take place. Parents, although you may feel that you've been called on to homeschool your students, when frustration sets in and the isolation is too much, take time to breathe and enjoy the time you've been given. Though it is certainly not the way I would have wanted it, my senior is home far more now than he would be otherwise. And I'm going to use this time to sit down and have dinners together, to have family game nights, and watch all those classic movies I never quite had time to watch with him. I've seen many parents posting on social media about frustrations regarding getting school assignments completed or frustration over trying to come up with academic-based things to do at home. Set the schoolwork to the side when it becomes overwhelming and take a walk around the neighborhood. Bake cookies together and get that flower bed cleaned out and ready for spring. The schoolwork shouldn't take all day, and the school isn't expecting you to fill in with reading and writing all the extra hours of the day. Find meaningful learning in a real-world experience throughout your day. Cooking is a great way to get in some math every day. Write letters to family members. Woodworking or sewing is another great way to get in some math skills. Make it fun and collaborative, and while you're social distancing from the world, find simple ways to grow closer to your family. At work, this is unknown territory as well. At GISD, that's Greenwood ISD, we are learning as we go how to best meet the needs of our students while we are unable to have them on our campuses. Teachers have come up with creative ways to connect with students. They may not be in the classroom each day, but they're still teaching and checking in. When work was sent out last week through bus stop delivery and curbside pickup, it was thrilling to see our students running towards those buses or eagerly flipping through their packets before they even left the parking lot. We were reminded that our students love learning and are hungry for new knowledge and learning experiences. There were many teachers, coaches, and staff members who showed up in a big way to help roll out assignments and meals to our students. Our community members showed up as always. We don't even have to reach out and find people. God just sends them our way. Almost as soon as we finished planning our lunch pickup and delivery, of which community members had no knowledge, I started receiving texts from community members who were home from work or retired educators who just wanted to help with anything. Those community members showed up at 7 a.m. to get food bags ready for distribution and pickup. Others have stepped in to help drop off donated food boxes, toiletry items that have been needed, and running errands or donating needed items. If it takes a village, this is the one of which I want to be a part. I have known that Greenwood is a community like no other, but this experience has only reinforced that for me. From Karen Cook, a kindergarten teacher delivering suburban loads full of supplies to students in her class, to a rumor I've heard that Sandra Smith, the cafeteria manager, will be making her famous Ranger cake for lunch pickup this week. Everyone has pitched in to help. The community has come together as we always do. You won't see us call press conferences or advertise in a big and brassy way. News travels through the grapevine and via an anonymous angel network. When community resources run low and local stores run out of supplies, we have families bring pork, fresh eggs, and homemade bread. Families in our community bring canned goods from their own pantries and fresh shelled pecans. All of our students receive work to do, but we made sure that their bellies and hearts were full as well. And that is what makes it great to be a Greenwood Ranger. During this time of pandemic and social isolation, when all seems new and unknown, get back to the basics. Slow down and spend time with your family. Step in and help your community where you can. Although much is uncharted waters, what's important and what's not will help us all survive. Take care of your family. Look out for your neighbor. In a time that seems pretty dark, be the light. Heather Brown is GT coordinator for Greenwood ISD. MISD board to hold virtual meeting. The MISD board will hold a virtual meeting at 5:30 today, Tuesday, March 24th. The change to an online meeting setting is necessary because it is in keeping with CDC guidance to avoid gatherings of 10 or more people. The March 24th school board meeting will be live streamed to the public in an effort to prevent the spread of the virus. The public will be able to interact with the board during public comment period by phone or by filling out a form. This week, two other taxing entities have met or are scheduled to meet, the city and the county. Neither use the virtual meeting option. Governor Greg Abbott's suspension of open meeting laws last week provided MISD the opportunity to have a meeting conducted via video conference or audio conference, according to information in the district's agenda packet. The board president and presiding officers will not have to be physically present at one location, but a quorum will be required for the meeting on the video conference or phone. The district states that the public may access this meeting by clicking on the following link, midlandisd.net/stream. An electronic copy of the agenda can be viewed at v3.boardbook.org/public/public-home.asp(AK=165901). A recording of the meeting will be available for viewing on the district's website. The district also said there's a link for the public forum form that must be completed and submitted before the beginning of the meeting. This form is for anyone who wishes to address the board on an agenda or non-agenda topic for regular meetings. Deadline for the form submission is 5:30 today. The form is at forms.gle/fybmtgy-d8e5xkpv1a. The president of the board or designee will call for public comments at the beginning of the meeting during public forum and state the name of each person who has signed up to address the board. All other public forum rules will be followed. After the close of public forum, the board will proceed with the rest of the agenda. This may be viewed or heard by the public online or on the phone. MISD notebook, number of teachers resignations up year over year. The number of teachers resigning in March increased from 4 to 21 year over year, according to the district's board packet. It remains to be seen if March numbers are part of a reversal of fortunes for the district when it comes to teacher retention. At the end of the 2018-19 school year, MISD reported a 9.6% decrease in the total number of resignations and retirements compared to 2017-2018. The number of resignations and retirements has moved from fewer than 400 in both 2015-16 and 2016-17 to 491 in 2017-18 to 444 last school year. The 21 non-administration resignations reported at this meeting is more than during the 19 combined during the March meetings over the last 3 years. There are also 6 non-administration retirements. There wasn't one listed in March during meetings from past 3 academic years. Not included in this month's list of 21 resigning campus staff members was the resignation of Fannin principal Tara Crockett. MISD reports mixed results on this month's grade progress measures. MISD secondary students showed mixed results compared to where district leaders hoped they would be when they created measurements for a district turnaround plan. The 2 goal progress measurements being reviewed this month have to do with high school algebra and earning credits through the 9th grade. The GPMs are part of the district's Lone Star Governance Program. Goal progress measures 3.1 states that the percentage of first-year freshmen leaving grade 9 with the Algebra 1 credit will increase to 91% by the end of this year. Information provided by the district shows a percentage of 90 at this point in the current year, up from 86% at the end of last year and up from 84% at the same point of the school year for 2018-2019. A graphic in the agenda packet shows the 90 percentage of freshmen leaving grade 9 with Algebra 1 credit to be on target with the district's 5-year goal. Goal progress measure 3.2 states the percentage of first-year freshmen earning 6 or more credits will increase from 79% to 88% by the end of the school year, 2020. The district showed 84% at this point in the current year, up from 82% at the end of 2018-19, and up to 80% at this point in 18-19. A graphic in the agenda packet shows the 82% of first-year freshmen earning 6 or more credits to be lower than the target line from the district's 5-year goal. The percentage of first-year freshmen earning 6 or more credits will increase from 79% to 88% by the end of school year 2020. MISD meals and enrichment pickup locations and times. Midland ISD Child Nutrition Services will provide free breakfast and lunch to students who want them. Students do not have to be on free or reduced lunch to receive a meal. Meals are grab and go and may be picked up at any of the following locations. Also, academic enrichment packets may be picked up at the meal sites. For more information, go to midlandmisd.net/COVID-19. Breakfast will be served 7:30 to 8:30 a.m. and lunch will be served 11:30 to 12:30 at the following locations. Elementary schools: Bonham, East Parking Drive; Bowie, West Parking; Bunch, East Bus Drive; Burnett, East Parking Drive; Bush, North Bus Parent Drive; De Zavala, East Parent Drive; Fannin, West Parent Drive; Franks, East Service Loop Drive; Great House, West Service Loop Drive; Henderson, West Parent Drive; Lamar, East Service Loop Drive; Long, East Street Parking; Milam, East Street Parking; Parker, West Bus Drive; Pease, West Parking Drive; Rusk, East Bus Drive; Santa Rita, West Drive; Scarborough, South Parking Drive; South, North Street Curb; Travis, South Parent Drive; Yarbor, North Bus Drive. At the secondary schools: San Jacinto in the East Bush Drive; Goddard, East Staff Parking; Midland High, the A Street Band Hall Service Loop; South Interstate 20 Mobile Sites, Yellow MISD Buses; parked at Cotton Flat Baptist Church, 6409 Highway 349; Valley View Baptist Church, 5500 FM 1213; Twin Oaks Mobile Home Park, 5200 South County Road 1200; Airline Mobile Home Park, 7100 West Highway 80; Bates Field Estates, West County Road 171 and South County Road 1315. Pick up breakfast and lunch at 7:30, between 7:30 and 8 at that last location, Bates Field Estates. Academic enrichment packets available. Academic enrichment activities for all grade levels are available at MISD.net enrichment. For those without internet access, hard copies can be picked up from meal distribution sites, 7:30 to 8:30 a.m. and 11:30 to 12:30. Activities are by grade ranges: pre-K, kindergarten through second, third through fifth, sixth through eighth, and ninth through 12th. For those with children within each grade range, only one packet will be needed. All pre-K through 5th grade packets are available in English and Spanish. From the MRT Sports Section 424, COM Teams Finding Ways to Train Without a Pool, by Christopher Hadorn, C-H-A-D-O-R-N at MRT.com. Stay-at-home athletic training has become the norm during this pandemic, but it's even more of a hindrance for swimmers and divers that don't have access to a pool. Basketball players can still shoot and dribble, with hoops being commonplace. Soccer players only need a ball. But aquatic athletes are grounded without a body of water. The COM aquatic swimming and diving teams have been trying to make the best of this situation after COM suspended almost all activities at its facilities until at least April 3rd. In compliance with federal guidelines set by the CDC and the governor's executive order last week that social gatherings be limited to 10 people and that gyms be closed. Both the swim and dive teams can't use the COM facilities. It is disappointing that the kids are sad that they're not able to be here, COM Aquatics President Director Brad Swindig said. I think we're like everybody else in trying to do the best we can in this situation and be supportive in the spirit of what our government is asking us to do. On Monday, COM head swim coach Jenna Perkey said her coaching staff drove around town and dropped off equipment that included dumbbells, jump ropes, medicine balls, and mini bands so their swimmers could engage in aerobic cardio and strength workouts at home. COM will hold live Facebook video classes for high school swimmers at noon, junior high swimmers at 2, and the rest of its swimmers at 4 on weekdays. We're not the only ones who will be starting late. Everyone's season will be cut short. I think our kids can stay positive and really put the effort in at home, and we won't be too far behind. They are going on runs and doing bike rides and doing a lot of jump roping. The COM dive team is also emphasizing at-home dry training that concentrates on conditioning, stretching, handstands, and takeoffs. COM head diving coach Gabby Chirichas says his divers have been engaged sharing videos of their workouts on social media. That's the nature of our sport. But for the most part, I think the kids have embraced it. We've got to do what everybody else is doing. I'm sure they're sad, but as long as we can do the best we can, whatever they can do at home is good. We can't just take a swimming pool to their house, obviously. Two of COM's divers are United States Olympic team hopefuls with Taryn Gilliland and Samantha Pickens. This week, there's been much discussion about whether the 2020 Summer Olympics will take place and be postponed. Trichis says he is fine with the International Olympic Committee postponing the event as long as it's not canceled. I think they need to host it. It doesn't matter if it's a year from now. If this works out for Taryn and Sam, I think that's awesome. COM Aquatics facilities are only open for people in need that use the pool for physical therapy and those with chronic serious medical conditions that require continual exercise at the risk of a deteriorating health condition. In support of these select individuals, COM states its staff will maintain safe distancing and follow protocol when it comes to cleaning and sterilization. We're making special one-on-one considerations for those people. In addition to the suspension of its swim teams, COM won't be able to hold its adult classes, lap swims, swim lessons, master swim, adult diving, or host events through April 3rd. It's very disappointing and it's tough on us financially. It's going to be very difficult, especially if this thing goes on for an extended time. So we worry about the people not being able to work out. We worry about our kids that are not able to compete. Some of them, they have been chasing their dreams and committing their time and hard work, and then they have to give it up. Death notices. Edmundo Hernandez. Edmundo Hernandez of Midland, Texas passed away March 15, 2020, with his loving family around him. Memorial services will be held at a later date. Survivors include daughter Alexis, sons Mundito, Marcus, CJ, and Ezra, six sisters, four brothers, several nieces, nephews, and friends. Estelita K. Davila. Estelita K. Davila, 70, of Midland, passed away March 22, 2020. Rosary will be held at 7 p.m. Thursday, March 26th, at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home in Midland. Funeral service will be held at 10 a.m. Friday, March 27th, at Nally Pickle and Welch Chapel, with interment following at American Heritage Cemetery. Survivors include husband Gilbert Davila.
Hello, this is Cindy reading from the Odessa American. Local COVID-19 info still under wraps. Officials continue to stonewall on health crisis, by Michael Merlot. The city of Odessa's declaration of emergency due to the coronavirus outbreak ends on Wednesday, and the city council will have to pass a renewal during tonight's meeting for the local emergency to remain intact. A statewide declaration of emergency by Governor Greg Abbott would remain in place until April 4th if it is not extended. Numbers of statewide cases as of noon Monday showed Texas had 373 cases, 10,055 people had been tested, and there have been 8 reported deaths, the Texas Tribune details. Both Abbott and President Trump have used daily press briefings to alert the public to the risks of the infectious disease, as well as to detail numbers tested and positive cases and numbers of deaths. Getting that information locally has been difficult, as all questions to city officials, county officials, hospital officials, and health department leadership are all being funneled to the City of Odessa's public information officer. Many questions are just ignored, while others are funneled through so many channels that it currently takes days to get even what seem to be the simplest questions answered. In fact, Mayor David Turner and Midland Mayor Patrick Payton announced their local state of emergency declarations during a joint news conference March 18th, and both sidestepped questions of how many actual Midlanders and Odessans had been tested for the virus, but both proclaimed the area a low-risk area. After days of not responding to how many had been tested locally, on Saturday, a news release detailed that Odessa still had 0 confirmed cases, but also that only 15 local tests had been administered. 11 of those were negative, and results for the other 4 are pending. Those numbers may seem lower than other areas, the release states, saying that other areas have higher numbers because drive-through testing generates more numbers. Health officials, however, said that a drive-through does not do the actual testing, but instead screens patients to see if they are eligible for testing at actual test sites. Turner said in a phone interview Monday that this is new territory for everybody involved. He spoke about the shelter-in-place orders that are being prepared across the state after Governor Abbott left it to local officials to act independently regarding those types of orders. "How do you make that call?" Turner said. "What's the number?" He added that a lot of mayors are having the exact same question. When asked what it would take to prepare a shelter-in-place order, Turner said he would have to discuss that further with Ector County Judge Debbie Hayes. Turner said that he will also be looking to see if, like the declaration of emergency, the city could order a shelter-in-place order if the county did not. A shelter-in-place order would require people to seek safety within the building they live in unless they are designated an essential worker. Repeated phone calls and efforts to speak to Hayes in person have been unsuccessful for more than a week. Regarding medical questions, Turner again on Monday said to speak to the Ector County Health Department officials, but when reached, ECHD employees said that they were doing no interviews and any questions would have to go through the city public information officer. The City of Odessa PIO said in a text message that the lead agency on releasing information is not the city but the county, and that she is releasing information regarding coronavirus on behalf of the Ector County Health Department.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Tuesday, March 24th, 2020, front page. Helping out. Surgeon forms Facebook group to sew masks by Ruth Campbell, RCAMPBELL at OAOA.com. Facing depletion in its stock of surgical masks, a general surgeon with Medical Center Hospital has formed a Facebook group to help increase the supply. Dr. Faye Armstrong Papp, who also is chair of the hospital's Department of Surgery, said the immediate goal of the group, Masks for Medics, Odessa, Texas, is to sew 2,000 masks. Last week, we became more and more aware of how dire the need is for protective equipment for medical staff in the hospital. Our normal resources are coming from China. Nothing's happening in China, as they're dealing with the coronavirus outbreak there. We realized last week that we had about 2 to 3 weeks of surgical masks left, and after that, we would have nothing to protect ourselves from our patients in surgery, Armstrong Pat said. We'd had a nurse several years ago who was allergic to the surgical masks, and I'd made masks for her to wear out of fabric until we found a hypoallergenic mask for her. I said, let's make our own. So I made up a couple of samples, brought them up here, showed them to hospital administration, and they said, okay. It took us until last Friday to get them completely approved, but we were already working with it prior to that. We're doing this completely on donations at this point in time and volunteer work. We've got doctors and nurses who've provided money. I have nurses sewing. I have all kinds of other hospital staff. I have a PhD professor from UTPB who's sewing, community people in churches. ECISD has a bunch of teachers. So just people all over are helping their fellow citizens. Armstrong Papp said she started the Facebook group the night of March 18th, and it now has more than 250 members. I've got 65 masks up here that we've got completed, washed, and sterilized. As of last night, March 22nd, there were another several dozen that were already ready, and I expect many more today, March 23rd. Our goal is to do about 2,000 for the hospital, although I just received word that they're going to ask for a more intensely protective type of mask that we will be working on to protect those who are at most risk, Armstrong Papp said. The masks we're doing now are just the simple ones that we will need for average risk protection, she added. These are not for great protection from coronavirus. This is just to keep the operating room going, because even with coronavirus here, the other problems that people have don't go away. I took care of a perforated colon over the weekend. There's going to be a perforated appendix. There's traumas. There's brain bleeds, cancers, all sorts of things we can't put off for 3 or 4 months that people will die or be severely injured or impacted if we can't take care of it now. And if we don't have masks in the operating room, we can't do the surgery. And so that's what these are for. The masks are made out of cotton, so they are bleachable and washable. Armstrong Papp said the ones she had Monday had already been bleached, washed, and ironed. They are similar in shape to the ones that they use, and while they won't have the same quality of protection, she said when you compare it to nothing, it's a whole lot better. Armstrong Papp said she has been overwhelmed by the response to the call for masks. I thought I could manage this on my own, but I've already got 4 people now that are on the group that are helping to be my managers and coordinators. We have folks that are cutting, folks that are sewing, folks that are picking up and delivering, she said. It's a big effort that's widely coordinated throughout the community. And there are people throughout the country that have been asking for information so they can start their own programs. And there's others that have popped up also independently throughout the country. She noted that the mask situation impacts her directly because she is a surgeon. And I also sew. I have been sewing since high school. And here in the Permian Basin, I've worked with the Permian Playhouse sewing costumes for many years, so I enjoy sewing, and this is a way that I can use my other skills to help with my day job, Armstrong Papp said. It takes about half an hour to an hour to make a mask, but with a remote assembly line approach, it goes down to 15 to 20 minutes. People are working in their own homes, trying to maintain distance and sterility. After they've picked up, she said, the masks are washed, bleached, and ironed to help prevent any kind of contamination that may have come from the people that are making them. The majority of the donations for the masks has come from medical staff and physicians, but nurses have also contributed. She said she hopes more than 2,000 masks can be provided. My goal would be to take care of Medical Center because that's where I work. That's my home. But then expand that out to other facilities, doctor's offices, and other places that have need. So the more the merrier, Armstrong Papp said. She said there is a sewing shop in town that has volunteered to make covers for N95 masks to help protect providers from the droplets that people cough or anything that's splashed. MCH Director of Public Relations Trevor Tankersley said the hospital has sufficient N95 masks for now, but that number could drastically switch once the first positive coronavirus case pops up. So we're always looking to try and get more of those, but as of now, we do have those, he said. Armstrong Papp said there is a nurse who has a new style of mask made with coffee filters that almost passed the N95 fit test. We're going to look at that and see if that's something that we can add to what we're sewing now to give the more intense protection for those that are in those higher risk areas, she said. What's important is to have a good fit over the face. It really doesn't matter how they're attached, whether they have elastic bands around the ears, around the head, or ties. The big thing is that you want the face covered. You don't want big gaps along the sides because things can get in that way, she said. If someone wants to join the group and is on Facebook, they can request to be added. If not, they can contact Armstrong Papp's office at 432-580-0300 and leave their name and number, and they will pass that on to the coordinators to add to the group. Annette Klinke, a certified nurse assistant for Ector County Independent School District, is a Facebook friend of Armstrong Papp's. I couldn't believe the hospital was going to need help. I'm always helping out, and I thought this was something I could do, especially because we didn't have students. I had a little bit of extra time at work, so I started Friday to work on the masks at work, and then found out I didn't have time, so now I'm sewing the masks at home, Klinke said. Over the weekend, she was able to complete 19 masks. I ran out of fabric, and then this morning, Annette Macias, who is one of our ECISD administrators, she had bought fabric and cut out enough for 50, so I went and picked up the fabric from her, and now I'm sewing those, Klinke said. She said she's glad to be able to help out. I work in the healthcare field myself. I'm a CNA for the school district, so I know how scary it is not to have what you need to perform your job and be safe, she said. Armstrong Papp thanked the Basin for its support. I just want to thank the people in this community, she said. We are in such a wonderful place after the shooting last year, and now seeing the response for the need for masks and supplies here, we're just so blessed to be here, Armstrong Papp said. The people in West Texas are probably the best people in the world.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.